Hi, this is Michelle Howard from the Alexandria Health Department.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, this is Jeannie Garbarino from the Vineland Health Department.
Hey, Jeannie. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Somebody just joined us. This is Jen with NATO.
Hi, Jen. This is Rick from Monterey. I have Susan, Raimondo, and San Victoria coming in the office.
Okay, great. Glad you could join us.
Thank you.
Hey, Jen. Stephen Hughes is here as well.
Okay, great. Thanks, Stephen. In a minute, but while we're waiting for others to join, just wanted to remind you that if you wanted to join us through the video portion as well, feel free to start plugging into the Adobe Connect link that was included as part of the meeting invitation. And you'll also notice that in the meeting invitation, Amy included several attachments. So I think when Andre from Wake County and Jeannie from Vineland shared their experiences, they may be referring to some of these documents. So just wanted to make sure that you were aware that those were available and part of the meeting invitation.
Hey, Jen. This is Amy. I would just like to encourage everyone to send on to Adobe Connect if they can. Jeannie and Andre will be presenting some presentations on Adobe Connect. So it would be great if you can be on there.
Well, I mean, you'd have to know if there's one of those inspectors doing nothing but that.
Yeah,
or they're
exactly.
Also doing some general EDH compliance stuff.
Hey, this is Debbie from Tulsa. I just logged in.
Hey, Debbie. This is Jen with NATO. How are you?
I am fine.
We're going to get started momentarily, but if you haven't logged into Adobe Connect, feel free to do so now. There will be some presentations. So.
Oh, okay. Why do I need to log in? Well, let me find my paperwork here.
Okay.
I just ran to the office, so, oh, here it is, Adobe Connect link. Okay.
Amy, do you think you've got most people, or are we waiting for a few other folks?
We had 30 people agree, but I'm not sure how many people said they were here.
Okay. All right, well, why don't we go ahead and get started. Welcome, everyone. This is Jen with NATO, Director for Environmental Health and Quality at NATO, and Amy has also joined with me. Many of you know Amy and have heard from Amy over the past several weeks and months, and we are very excited to be co-hosting this conference call with FDA, and in a minute we'll have FDA folks introduce themselves, and then we'll ask each of you to quickly go around the call and just introduce yourselves just to see who's online, and then we'll dive into the agenda. As you can see, it's pretty straightforward. We're going to ask the FDA specialist to give a very high-level overview of Standard 4, and then we have also invited Jeannie Garbarino and Andre Pierce. Jeannie is from Vineland County in New Jersey, and we've got Andre Pierce from Wake County in North Carolina to talk about their experiences, to give an overview of, you know, what they've learned, what are some of the barriers and challenges that they've encountered, especially with the standard on uniform inspection programs. And after their presentations, we'll open it up for Q&A, because really we want this to be an engaging conference call. We want this to be bi-directional, very informal. So if folks have questions, feel free to chime in. There's also a Q&A box in Adobe Connect, so feel free to enter in your questions through there as well. And then at the very end, we'll just wrap up, and we'll see if there are any action items either for NCHCO SBA or anybody else on the call. The whole point is to have this dedicated hour just to focus on Standard 4. When we had our mid-project conference call for Cohort 3, this is one of the areas where we heard a lot of comment and input back on in terms of if we were to host a conference call on any particular standard, it seemed like this was the most popular one. So we're going to give this a shot, and we may model other standards after this call. So we'd love to get any input and feedback after the call if you thought that this worked well. We may do this moving forward for all the other standards. We wanted to open it up beyond just the current cohort. So we invited folks from the first and the second cohort as well. So I think with that, Stephen and Donna, did you want to introduce yourselves? And then we'll have the rest of the participants introduce themselves.
Sure. I'm Stephen Hughes. I'm with the FDA and the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. First, I just wanted to thank NCHCO for coordinating and putting on this call. You know, I, as an FDA person now, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the program standards, but sometimes I think the best opportunity to learn about them are when you can share information and talk amongst enrolled jurisdictions to learn about how other people have successfully implemented the standards in their jurisdiction. So I, you know, I'm appreciative of this opportunity to listen to your all's discussion. And I just wanted to echo what Jen said. You know, we've been exploring the option of doing this maybe more frequently and, you know, with other standards. And so as you participate in this call, please keep in mind any feedback, you know, both positive and negative that you might be willing to share with us so that if we move forward with doing this more often, we can make this experience as positive as possible.
Go ahead, Donna.
Okay, I'm Donna Winucha. I'm a regional retail food specialist in the Southeast region of FDA, and I primarily cover North and South Carolina. And I also commend NCHCO for putting this together today. I must say, most jurisdictions struggle with meeting Standard 4, or at least working towards Standard 4, because it is such an important issue, and that is quality assurance of your folks. So I'm really happy to have this forum today for everyone to share their stuff and to share their experiences and to share their templates that they've used in Standard 4 jurisdictions to take advantage of and move forward on Standard 4 as well. So kudos to Jen and Amy for putting this together and for all of you jurisdictions that are willing to share today.
Great. Thanks, Donna. Amy, did you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I think everyone knows me a little bit. I'm Amy Chain. I'm a program assistant for environmental health. I've been helping with the mentorship program for the past three cohorts. That's about it.
Short and sweet. Thanks, Amy. All right. Andre and Jeannie, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Andre Pierce from Wake County, Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'm Environmental Health Director here, and we thank you for putting the call together.
Hi, this is Jeannie Garbarino. I'm from the Vineland, New Jersey Health Department.
Great. Thanks, Andre and Jeannie. And in a little bit, we'll hear from both of them on their experience. All right. So in no particular order, for those of you on the phone, feel free to start introducing yourself. It's just more of an idea of who's on today's call.
Hello, this is Melody Boyer from Twin Falls, Idaho. I'm the Environmental Health Director in South Central Public Health District, and I was one of the first cohorts for mentorship program, and I'm really happy to get a chance to reconnect with Jen, Amy, and Andre.
Good to hear your voice, Melody.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Andre and Melody. This is Marilyn Tapia from Riverstone Health in Billings, Montana. Good to talk with you guys again. I was part of the first cohort with Andre and Melody.
Oh, great. I was hoping you were going to be on the call, Marilyn.
Yes, and so hi to both of you. And also, this is so fortuitous because I just finished pilot testing procedure for us to work on to meet standard four, so I'm really anxious to hear what you guys have to say.
Awesome.
Great.
Hi, this is Dan Reese with the Sierra Gorda County Department of Public Health. I was also in the first cohort, and we just submitted for an audit for standard four, so we haven't heard back yet, so I'm hoping it goes well.
Hear you, Dan.
This is Archer Campbell in Charlottesville, Virginia. We're working on Standard 4 as part of our grant with as a mentee with Fairfax County in Virginia. And we probably aren't going to meet it this year. Well, maybe later in the year. We've done one set of audits and are really looking forward to everybody's input on this.
My name is Jason Reagan. I'm with Gwinnett County Environmental Health Department here in Atlanta, Georgia. And we recently, within the past couple of months, have actually had our Standard 4 audited, and we did meet it. So we've actually, I'm waiting on Chris Smith, our FDA retail food specialist, to get our certificate to us. He's working on that. So, I'm curious just to see how everybody else kind of went through and set their, you know, their program up compared to ours.
Georges County, Maryland. I have Myra Leonard with me and Deb Freeman, and we're currently working on Standard 4.
This is Wendy Cochran from the Frederick County Health Department, also in Maryland, and we're in the current cohort of the mentorship program, although we currently do not meet Standard 4, just interested in hearing more about it because we're going to be working on it soon.
This is Debbie Watts in Tulsa, Oklahoma with the Tulsa Health Department, and I'm the food program manager here, and we have met Standard 4, but it's time for us to do a reassessment, and we've changed some policies and procedures and need to update those documents to make sure that I'm sure we still meet it, but we have changed some documents, and so we need to update our procedures manual to reflect the changes that we've done for that.
This is Rick Encarnacion and Susan Raimondo from Monterey County here in California. We're with the current cohort, and we haven't started our Standard 4, but we're working on it.
This is Ron.
This is Amy from Cape Girardeau County. I'm here with Samantha Powers. We have not started Standard 4 yet, but it's one that we're looking forward to doing next. So we really want to get some insight on how everyone else has handled this.
Hi, this is Jessica Lucas from the city of Bethlehem. We also have not started Standard 4 yet.
This is Tim Scott and Packaday Prey, Seattle from Lake County, California. And we are just entering the early phases of addressing Standard 4, and look forward to hearing other people's comments that may guide us along into having success like others.
This is Paul Strom from Lake County, Ohio. I'm with Nancy Nias, Katie Hutchison, and Elizabeth Rinder. We are part of cohort number 2, and we have been working towards standard 2, 7, and been working pretty hard on 4 recently.
This is Melissa McKenzie with Chatham County, along with Roxana Lopez. We have started on standard 4.
This is Ron Campbell in Fairfax County, Virginia, with Rob Irwin. And I don't know if Jeannie and Andre remember, but back in September, I actually spoke to both of you as benchmark programs for us to put together a QA program based on Standard 4. And we've actually rolled that out in February, and we should be doing our self-assessments on Standard 4 in a couple of months.
Holly Hare, Richmond County Health Department, Rockingham, North Carolina. We've only been in this standard since July of last year, so we aren't getting back to submit our self-assessment.
All right, did we get everybody?
This Jim Brown with Pitt County here in North Carolina. I'm here with Ron Honeycutt. And we're working on standard 7 and 9, and we're pretty much complete, I think, with standard 7.
Great. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, this is Chris Saxton with Cass County Health Department in Missouri. I'm currently a mentee with for standard 4, working with Gwinnett County.
You want to? Okay, then I'm going to turn it over to Stephen and Donna to give a very high-level overview of Standard 4. I think Barbara Cattay was invited, but unfortunately she's feeling under the weather, so she won't be able to join us on today's call. So, Stephen and Donna?
Sure. I'll try and keep this real quick, and then if Donna has anything to add, she can jump in. Standard 4 is the Uniform Inspection Program standard. It provides a series of performance elements with which you can use to see how your staff is doing in the field. You know, the term that's used in the standard is quality assurance, and it certainly does provide a mechanism for that. But I think maybe more importantly, it's almost an internal mechanism for continuous improvement. The way I think about the standard is that in seeing how your staff is doing in the field, you can determine whether you need to make adjustments or changes to maybe your training program in Standard 2 or your enforcement policies and procedures in Standard 6. And I would certainly agree with what Donna said earlier, that it's one of the more challenging standards to meet. So, Donna, do you have anything to add?
No, I think you did a great job. This is one that's really worth the time to get into, because you do have that day-to-day quality assurance piece that really helps you calibrate your folks as you go down the road. So it is a very important yet somewhat difficult standard to meet, but one you can definitely start moving towards.
Great. Thanks, Stephen and Donna. I'm going to now turn it over to Andre and Jeannie then to talk through a little bit what they've been doing in their jurisdictions around Standard 4.
Okay, this is Andre, and I'm going to try to turn these slides on. Hold on. Well, I'm having difficulty. Okay. Can you see some slides?
Yes.
Okay. So So this is, it should say Wake County Environmental Health, and this should show in a uniform inspection program, which is what we're talking about, and I hope you can see that. So, I mean, everyone on the call knows these things, but I just thought when I was putting a few slides together to sort of frame the conversation that we'd talk a little bit about what the purpose is. And so there I have it written down there right out of the manual, and with a goal of having an inspection program that ultimately reduces risk factors to the community. And so the requirements of the standards were, and I think they're fairly simple as I read them, was an ongoing quality assurance program. In Wake County, we've had a quality assurance program for years. It wasn't really codified in a policy, but it was really written down in terms of work measures or work objectives for each staff person. And then for a long time, we've had a team. We have teams. We have three teams in that program, and the team leaders ride out with the staff three times each year, and then for the fourth quarter, they do sort of a mid-year review. So that's something they've done for quite a while. The team leaders review a high percentage of all the inspection sheets come across their desk, and they review a percentage of those. And I asked today Francis to remind me, and, you know, a good number. If there's problems with a particular person or if there's a new person, they obviously get a little bit more review than other folks. But occasionally there'll be hiccups and there'll be problems with a new item that will get caught in that process. I also have to say that our data is immediately uploaded to a public website that's available for everyone. So there's quite a bit of public interest in this data. So it's important from a quality perspective and also from, you know, in general, that we not have comments that are out of line or not concise or the things that align with the standard. And then the second requirement that I'll list there, which I think is important for this standard, is the 10 quality assurance program elements. And I'll just pull those up next. And that's right from the manual. And I think that's a really key piece of the standard that you've got to integrate into your quality assurance piece. So although we had a quality assurance program going, we had a few of these items that were really not woven into it. And do you agree with that, those who are hearing me? Anybody else out there that's not muted?
This is Jason. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, you got to start there first with those 10 items.
I mean, I think that's central. And, Jason, I know you meet it. Actually, I've not submitted ours yet, but you meet it. And so a few of those for us as we were looking at that. So those have really got to be central to the plan, I think. And then the last thing really that I think we at this point really need to fine-tune before we submit is corrective action. So what happens if you find someone who's not following, or what happens if you don't meet the percentage compliance with this standard? And so I think specifically writing out what your corrective action is important. And then last of all, meeting the 75%, which is a table that you fill in. Last year, we ran the table. We did meet, and then this year, we're going to run it again. And when I anticipate we meet again, we will go ahead then and turn in the standard. One of the big problems for us, let me also say about Wake County, we're also working on standardizing our staff, which is a very slow process. We have about 21 folks, so it's been a very slow process. It's a very cumbersome thing to do, but that will feed into the uniformity in this inspection program. One of the drawbacks that we had in North Carolina, and I won't take up a lot of time so it can be more interactive, but one of the problems that we had until 2012, we were a sort of a standalone state in terms of food code. So we had an inspection sheet that was really not compliant with the federal standard on that. So this now is North Carolina's inspection sheet. So one of the requirements of the 10 essential elements or the 10 essential in the standard is that you must be able to mark in, out, not observed, or not applicable. And then you've got to have a provision in here for corrected during the inspection, repeats, and the verifications. So So this sheet then begins to give us the framework that we could actually assess that number, that first essential. And then later on, you'll see in the 10 essentials, your follow through, your corrected during inspection is number 7. I could go back and look at those, but this really was the framework for us in North Carolina, and all the counties in North Carolina would be the same here. Without this, we really could not have ever met standard 4. So this really was something to keep us from achieving that. And now we can. Also, I'll say, just from our perspective, a lot of these requirements are sort of built into our software. So repeat violations sort of get highlighted for the inspector when they're out there. We submit our paperwork online. It's immediately available in the file, really, because our files really are redundant in the paper world. So that's just a little bit about it. But until we had this sheet in place, we were not able to meet standard four. So when we did our assessment in 2010, we couldn't, I mean, just simply because of the sheet, we weren't. So this was our biggest hitch. Really all I've got to share.
Okay, great. Thanks, Andre.
Huh?
Jeannie, you're up.
Okay. I don't see the share thing on my screen yet.
Andre, I think you just have to stop sharing. Okay.
Okay. Do you see that? No, probably not.
I mean, it looks like it's loading, but you don't see anything yet.
But I hit share my screen. Maybe. I got it. Hold on. Okay. To go.
Okay.
Are you seeing it? I'm not.
I think so. Yeah.
I can see it.
Okay.
Or uniformity.
There we go. Standard for uniformity.
Yep.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. So as Andre said and the other FDA people said, this standard to me is all about uniformity and consistency amongst my inspectors. And that's always been a priority for me, but this measure of this standard 4 gives us a way to measure that to see whether we're really doing the job or not. I will tell you that this standard really scared me, and I put it off as long as possible. But when I actually got to doing it, it really wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. So the first thing that you have to have before you can really do this is policies and procedures on your retail food program in place. Okay. Whoops. Okay. So the first thing that I did in creating standard 4 or accomplishing standard 4 is to create a quality assurance plan or program. And I believe you all have a copy of ours, but here is the first page of ours. And it was a real challenge for me and took a lot of thought. And I had to sit down and say, okay, what do I really expect from my inspectors out there? And I had to put that down on paper. And I consider this to be a living document. If I need to change something, you know, it can always get changed. Andre showed you these 10 criteria. I use the 10 criteria that Standard 4 has to develop that plan, and I embedded some of my own criteria within some sections. For example, standard number 3 I easily expanded that to include some of our policies and procedures to, you know, specify them a little bit more. I really wanted it to work, and not, I just didn't do the bare minimum. I suppose you could just put the bare minimum 10 things on there, but I expanded on mine. I didn't add everything in our policies to number 3, but I try to keep that all in mind when I'm out in the field with my inspectors. The steps I did add, I put there to emphasize some points or remind me or my inspectors to do some things. The next thing that I did, and within that quality assurance plan, is I created a, you have to create an action plan. If you find problems with the inspectors, what steps will you take? And here's what my criteria are in order, on-site training, classroom training, and then it goes down into the actual warnings and termination. Fortunately, I have not had to go any farther than classroom training on any of my inspectors. So my next step was to create a tool that I could take out in the field to easily evaluate each inspector. And here's the first page of ours. I believe you have a copy of that as well that Amy sent all of you. I tried to keep it simple but very usable. The first column there that I have highlighted in yellow corresponds to a number of criteria from the FDA standard to make it easier on me when tallying up my overall worksheet. So, for example, if one of my inspectors doesn't check temperatures on some foods in deep containers, which would be a potential cooling problem, I would mark the second number one as needs improvement, and number one of the criteria, excuse me, of the 10 criteria would not be in compliance. The second column is the question that I must answer when I'm out in the field. The next columns tell me if the aspect was satisfactory or not. My inspectors were all given copies of the plan and the form, so they know exactly what I expect of them and what I'm looking for. I go out with them on routine inspections. My inspectors are really, really good, but we're not all perfect. I have seen a couple of things that needed to be addressed. And by doing this exercise, I was actually able to catch those things and address them. If we hadn't been doing this, I would have never caught those things, and they would have continued, I'm sure. The hardest part of the on-site inspection where I go with my inspectors and watch them, for them is they're very nervous. But for me, the hardest part is keeping quiet and not interfering until they're done. By waiting till the very end and they tell me they're done, I usually will see my inspectors have done something or have addressed something, but just maybe not in the order that I would have done it. So keeping quiet is the hard part. And a fire review of the last 2 to 3 inspections is necessary to see if there are any repeat issues and how the inspector deals with them. To tally up the findings, my findings, I record the findings with each inspector on this sheet, which is in standard 4 documents, table 4-2. Unlike a larger health department, I am not going to fill in the compliance rate marked in yellow on the bottom under each column. Any compliance actions will be marked with an X if they're in compliance. For a smaller health department like I'm from, I only have 4 inspectors. So instead of adding up all the columns, I am going to be concerned with total numbers in compliance. And I only have 4 inspectors, so I'm going to do 2 quality assurance inspections with each of my inspectors and then calculate my total in compliance. I will need at least 65 in compliance checks for the entire chart in order to meet standard 4. If you have less than 4 inspectors, you must do at least 8 of field evaluations, which means you're going to be doing more than 2 per inspector in a 5-year assessment period. For each assessment period with less than 10 inspectors, you complete this table and declare if you have met the standard or not. That's really it. It's not as bad as it seems. It was actually a lot easier, and I actually really like this standard. Thank you. And that's it.
Great. Thanks, Jeannie. So it was really good to see how both Andre and Jeannie approached, you know, making progress and trying to meet standard four, and actually seeing some of the tools that they used and they actually developed, you know, to help their jurisdiction, which I would think would be useful for some other jurisdictions as well. The whole point is, you know, through the mentorship program, there's no need to reinvent the wheel if another jurisdiction has created something that you could actually take and modify and use it for your own jurisdiction. So I'm going to open up for questions and answers. It sounded like there was a lot of you that have either made quite a bit of progress or are looking to overcome some barriers and challenges. So it would be great if we could hear what are some of your barriers, what are some of your challenges, or if you have tools and resources that might help to address, you know, some of these big concerns. I mean, that would be great to hear as well.
This is Debbie in Tulsa. I was wondering if I could get a copy of Andre's presentation. We have a lot of newer staff that just, you say program standards and they have no clue. And so after our new fiscal year starts in a couple of weeks, I'm going to start trying to reintroduce it to basically a new generation that we have here. And I thought that his summary was very concise and explanatory. And I thought that might be a good intro and it would save me from piping up stuff to do. And so I was wondering, Andre, if you're willing to share.
Sure. Amy, do you have a copy of it that you could share?
I do. I could send it out to everyone after.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Sure.
This is Marilyn in Riverstone Health in Montana. I presented my pilot project to a group, an evaluation group last week, and one of the questions that was addressed to me that I wasn't able to answer was how and if one might want to incorporate time or efficient use of time in the evaluation process for uniformity and quality of inspections. Does anybody have any suggestions on that?
That's a very, this is Andre. That is a very interesting question. We have some staff here that spend probably a little more time than we think they should, but I would love to hear anyone else's idea on that as well.
This is Debbie. I concur. We have some people that are in the office way more than they should be, and it definitely shows in their overall work performance. We haven't figured out how to solve it yet either, except be, you know, office Nazis and tell them to leave.
Is the question related to time spent doing a particular inspection or time spent generally not productively maybe sitting in the office? Or...
Sorry, this is Wendy in Frederick County, Maryland. I have the same issue here, and I'm addressing it, but nothing's really being done. I'm reflecting it in the person's PEP, their evaluation, but again, nothing really seems to be happening with it. I'm having issues both with, you know, just general unproductiveness in the office, because we have daily reports that the inspectors fill out of, you know, what they do each day, both inspections and what they do in the office, and this person's daily report is basically reflecting that they're doing nothing. And also, like, they're spending too much time actually in facilities doing inspections when it's completely, you know, not justified and uncalled for, like a mobile unit that doesn't serve anything but prepackaged novelty ice cream and, you know, the inspection took an hour and a half. You know, like, well, why? You know, there's no conceivable reason why it should have taken an hour and a half. And it just seems like there's really no way to address it, to do anything about it.
Hello, this is James Scott from Lake County, California. And it seems like there needs to be consideration for maybe a robust performance standard of employees. One of the things that Lake County has done is set a minimum per day inspections, you know, and that has to be flexed because it depends on the level of risk of the facility, of course. But I think the key is to have some really strong communication with the employee and try to determine what shortfalls they may have or hindrances that prevent them from being successful in meeting the expectation of at least a baseline performance standard. That's a thought from Lake County.
Well, here in Frederick County, Maryland, in their job description, which we call MS-22s, we have a minimum number of inspections that the inspectors are required to do a month, by the month, because then that takes into account, you know, days off and leave and sick days and the different risk factors and all that kind of stuff. So it's a minimum number of inspections that they're required to do per month. And then, like I said, this person, never makes that minimum. So it is being addressed in their evaluation, but nothing really seems to be done because that's just one part of their overall evaluation.
I think it's important to remember that this standard is intended to capture the performance of somebody or your entire staff as they work through a specific inspection or a group of inspections. You know, it's not really intended to capture whether somebody is doing two inspections a day or three or four. And so if you're talking about time spent efficiently during a particular inspection, then there's nothing to prevent you from adding that on to your evaluation of their performance during that inspection. But I would caution you maybe against using this tool to measure how many specific inspections they do a day or a week or a month.
Yeah, this is Andre. Who asked the question? Who brought this up originally?
I think Marilyn did.
Yeah, Marilyn. So you're talking, aren't you speaking more about the length of time and whether how effectively someone communicates in that length of time?
Yes, I'm referring more to not overall employee productivity and how many inspections they do in a month or a year, but more how effectively they use their time when they're actually conducting the inspection in the facility.
I think that's interesting, and I think that's something that we should probably add a length of time, just to know if someone does an excellent job, did they do that in an hour or they do that in 3 hours? We have some cases where people are spending an inordinate amount of time in facilities, and I think that you lose your effectiveness because people are trying to do their jobs, and you've got a variance. So I think that's a very interesting question. Maybe we should just add the amount of time that someone has and see how much variance across that, because that is a uniformity issue. As the industry sees us, I think, Donna, you sometimes talk about going in and doing an assessment in a certain amount of time when you're standardizing staff.
If you have six inspectors on your staff and it takes five of them to do a full inspection of one facility, if it takes them an average of, 45 minutes to an hour to do a full inspection, but it always takes, this one person, double that. They're always, taking a lot longer than the rest of the staff to do the same thing. Is that something like what we're talking about?
Marilyn?
Yes, I think, there's variations. You might have a risk level 3 or 4 food establishment, and one inspector will be in and out of there in, half an hour, and somebody else may take 2 hours. And sometimes that's tied to the completeness and quality of the inspection. Sometimes it's not. It depends on the facility. But I noticed when I was doing field reviews with my inspectors, they all have different styles, obviously, but some are very thorough in a very kind of a methodical, expedient way, and others kind of wander around and maybe double-check things a couple of times, and then they go to something else, and then they come back, and it just doesn't seem a very systematic approach. So they're taking a really long time, and the results are maybe not as high quality because they're jumping around, it's confusing, they're not communicating clearly. So I think there's definitely a time element. If someone's taking a long time, doesn't necessarily mean they're doing a thorough job.
This is Ron in Fairfax, and I'd just like to go back to Stephen's comment a minute ago. We've incorporated the 10 criteria that, you know, everybody's aware of, and we've added our own. We've added three more. We turn this into a real QA program, not just you know, meet standard four. And I agree with Stephen, and our program is set up that this QA really is just that. We're assessing how the inspections are being done in the field, and we have taken great pains to completely segregate this performance that we're assessing through this QA and standard four, segregate that from what would be a typical performance evaluation, which is where I think this whole time conversation kind of falls. And we're in the same fix. I mean, we have people and we have concerns about that, but it is one of the items that we look at when we do the QA, but it's not something that that we really put a lot of weight into. It's not one of the original 10 criteria. As an assessor, I might say something to the staff person one time, and if we see it again, I might say something a second time. And then ultimately, it could turn into a performance problem that needs to be addressed, I guess. But on the face of it, it's not something that we really pay a lot of attention to in the QA program that's been put together based on standard four.
If I could ask a question for those of you that have implemented the QA program in Standard 4, I guess a two-part question. Did you have challenges getting buy-in from your staff to do so? And if you had challenges, how did you overcome them?
Stephen, hi. This is Archer Campbell in Charlottesville. Yeah, I just finished 7 out of 8 QA evaluations in our district. And one of the things that the obstacles I sort of had to overcome from the beginning, and I'd love to get your feedback on this, is, you know, people kept saying, well, we already do standardization twice a year. Why is this different than standardization? So I sort of had to overcome that. This is more about how effective we are when we do the inspection. And the one thing I keep trying to remember through this whole process is to focus on how are we minimizing the risk factors out in the community. And so how effective are we when we do an inspection to minimize the risk factors in that facility? And time is certainly a factor, but also are we taking corrective action? That's been a challenge, that it's, you know, the inspection is based on a history. And are we moving forward with the corrective actions? And are we documenting? You know, when we talk about long-term corrective actions, are we documenting those? So for us, it's different than standardization because it's more about documentation and effectiveness. And I would like to hear your, you know, sort of the FDA philosophy, if that's sort of the distinction that you make between standardization and QA.
Donna, are you interested in weighing in on this? You might have a better perspective on this than myself.
Sure. Yeah. Standardization is a different animal than uniformity of your program. Standard four is connected to your policies that you all use to get compliance at the end of the day. Somehow, some way you have to get to that compliance. And those policies as to how you get there define that path for you. So four and six are closely tied together. Standardization in two is really just looking at the individual, making sure that they have all the knowledge, skills, and abilities to know the code, as well as to apply it to a retail food establishment using the FDA protocol. So really it's almost an individual assessment that is standardization. That's why we have people listed one by one in standard two as to do they complete all of the steps one through five from the pre-curriculum courses all the way through CEUs after standardization versus standard four is really more all-encompassing of, as you said, the effectiveness of your program, keeping in mind all the policies that you have in place to be followed so that everyone is being regulated the same way. It really is more about how you regulate your industry, keeping in mind that you have individuals doing the inspections, but they all must follow the policies. Yes, they should all be standardized. That's all part of this whole mix also. But four is definitely more about your program. Two is more based on the individual being to pass the exercises and to keep their skill level up. Does that help?
Yeah, it does. And so as I'm writing our QA policy, I'm looking at where I should integrate at all even a reference to our standardization process.
Well, four doesn't have a direct connection to two. Two is a separate standard. So I would see that is handled separately under standard two. Making sure each one of your folks were standardized, having one training officer who standardizes everyone else, then having that tracking system in place of the educational requirements and the training requirements there. Four is really separate from that. You want to be sure that four is tightly connected to six, as I said earlier. So you want to be sure you have those policies that six requires you to have to get to compliance so that your folks can use them in four and be successful.
Yeah, and it's interesting because as we did our self-assessment and as we started working on two and three and four, we realized that we needed an enforcement policy, really, a step-by-step enforcement policy that was really clear in order to be successful in standard four. And so we've done that. And so it's interesting how sort of integrated they are, these three.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, to my standpoint, it's almost as though you need six before you can do four. But it's not quite set up that way because it's almost a chicken and the egg scenario. You need the policies in place to make sure that your folks are getting compliance at the end of the day in a very uniform manner.
Yeah, and so that's what has driven us to do some more policies along the way, although we don't meet six fully, but it has given us a lot of tools along the way to really meet some of these other standards.
Excellent. And I think we need to back up and remember that it's not necessarily about meeting standards. It's about moving toward meeting the standards. So if you're making progress towards meeting a standard by getting some more policies in place but then recognizing you still have some gaps, that's still that quality improvement process, and that's exactly where we want to be, is constantly moving forward. So it's part of the journey almost is just as important or even more important than actually meeting the deadline.
I hate to take up the time, but I have one more question. When you do three file reviews and a field evaluation, What's the sort of the FDA philosophy on integrate? Is there any integration between those four? Or sort of linked to, are they linked to the same facility, or do you just sort of do them all randomly?
Well, that was a question I was going to turn back to Andre or Jenny. How do you guys select your facilities to visit?
Ours are randomly selected by the team that each individual has, and then the team leader goes and picks one of those facilities randomly to do it. Now, we don't randomize it. I think, Jason, do you have a randomizer for yours?
We do. We take the number of facilities and put them in an Excel spreadsheet. So each inspector has a list of their known facilities. So say they had 100 of them. We pull those out, put them in Excel, and we run the randomizer, and the randomizer will tell you to pull, you know, we got right now we've got it pulling four facilities. You only have to do two. But, if the first two, if something's wrong with them, say if that's one that's just opened up recently and there's not enough history, we can go to the next one down the line. But yeah, that's kind of how we set ours up anyways, is to use a program like that.
Right. We look randomly, but we don't have a systematic way like you have there in Gwinnett.
Okay.
Do you link the file reviews to those facilities that you do field evaluations on?
I do not.
No, that's not how ours is set up.
This is Jason again. Going back a while ago, somebody mentioned something about standardization and this one being linked together or not being linked together. But in our policy and our written procedure, that's one of the things we put in there, is that, you know, if one of our staff does not conduct food, you know, retail food safety inspections or has not completed standardization, they're exempt from this process until they are standardized, and that's part of their regular job requirements or duties. So the only staff that we're really evaluating are the ones that are standardized and do food inspections.
This is Marilyn. Oh, excuse me.
Sorry, go ahead.
This is Marilyn. I was just going to briefly go back to how you get your staff to buy in and cooperate with this whole quality assurance process. That was a question that was asked to me also when I presented my project last week. And one of the things I found very, very effective was we're kind of new working on the program standards, and without even discussing the FDA criteria that's incorporated into standard 4, I asked the staff themselves, what do you guys think are the quality elements of an inspection? And they came up with their own list of what they think makes a difference and is important. And then from that, once we had that list, that was where we really started with our quality elements. And then we shared the FDA list and tried to match those. What we ended up coming up with was a list that expanded beyond the 10 quality elements listed in the program standards, and the staff really embraced that. And so they felt, because they participated in identifying what is defines a quality inspection, they had buy-in, they are just very receptive to this whole process.
That's great to hear, Marilyn. Would you be willing to share that?
I can do that.
Great, thanks. I thought I might have heard somebody trying to chime in before. Was that you, Jason, or was that somebody else?
I don't think it was me for that particular question. I mean, but as far as our buy-in, as far as our buy-in for our people, we really presented the program standards as a whole and just told them, you know, we're trying to keep our department, we really want to kind of set that gold standard, you know, by gradually working toward meeting all these. And we explained to them, you know, there's going to be some ride-alongs, there's going to be some evaluations, some new policies, but it's just making us better as a whole. And I think for the most part, setting that overall arching goal, you know, there's going to be some stuff in here that's new, but we're growing together as a team, you know. And we do invite them their input and buy-in and that kind of stuff, but that's just kind of the approach we took, and most everybody, you know, seems to embrace that pretty well.
So I want to be respectful of everybody's time. We have a few more minutes, but I wanted to make sure to see if there are any other burning questions anybody else might have, since we've got FDA and we've got two luminaries, Andre and Jeannie, to talk about Standard 4.
I'll just throw in one thing I think is important to add. I think every program that's called into here today has pieces and parts of this that they could start plugging in if they're interested in starting. You'll notice that our policy is high level, but we've integrated several things into that policy, including our Food Service Advisory Council. That is part of our quality assurance. Getting input from industry and taking that to the field is part of it. So why not just bring these things all together so they all work together? And so that's something I think, you know, we've done bits and pieces of this, we just never packaged it this way. And so, like Jason said, and we talked about the 10 elements, those have to be the backbone of this thing, and then that's sort of the package that we're looking to bring forward, I guess. And I wanted to leave that comment from Wake.
Well, and I think you're right on that. What we did was actually show other QA, I guess, assessments that we do. And basically, this Standard 4 is just kind of it kind of pulls all that together. You know, it's we do all these other trainings, but then we use Standard 4 just to capture that as a whole. So we list, you know, that's something else people can do is list out, you know, what other QA assessments that you do throughout the year. And then this one, you know, you got to be specific on this one too. And that was one thing that we did on the, when you get into the written procedures is, you know, how many discrepancies, like in each category, you know, you have to think about how many you're going to break it down. So if they just didn't do one thing right, do you count them out for that, or do you allow them to mark, you know, two things incorrectly before you mark it out? So you got to kind of dig down a little deeper too to set those trigger points.
This is Melody from Idaho, and I was wondering if is there a repository of all the Program Center 4 documents that we can access? Like, Jenna, you guys are collecting stuff from Andre and people that have tasks or Center 4?
Yes, that's a very excellent question. Amy, do you want to take this one, since I know you've been doing a lot of review of the tools from Food Shield?
Sure. We're working on putting a lot of these Food Shield items that were uploaded from the mentorship program. We'll be contacting people to see if it's okay to use the forms onto NATRO's mentorship program website. Right now there's a linking to something that says the forms are coming soon, and that will be populated hopefully before NEHA annual. So that should be up shortly, and we'll let everyone know when stuff is available up there.
That will be great. That will be very helpful for people trying to figure out what to do and save a lot of time, you know, from reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, absolutely. Our whole goal is to get at least a handful of tools for each of the standards up on NATRO's website, as Amy just mentioned, by the time the NEHA conference is, around the corner. Because we have a learning lab session. We had one last year, and we received so many overwhelmingly positive feedback about that session. We're actually doing another one this year, so if you happen to be at NEHA, feel free to stop by and participate in the session. But the whole point was to get all of the great tools and resources that you all had used or developed in making progress and overcoming some of these challenges challenges available to some of these other jurisdictions who might just be getting started or who actually have similar experiences and challenges. So we're going to be posting that online on our website just to make it a little bit more accessible.
Sounds great.
All right, well, we are a couple of minutes over, so I just wanted to thank everybody for jumping on today's call. Hopefully you found this conversation and the presentations and the discussion from Stephen, Donna, and Andre, and Jeannie very helpful and informative. I think it's always good to hear what others are doing, you know, hearing the similarities and the differences, you know, given the different jurisdictional sizes and the geographic locations. I made a couple of notes about action items, so we'll send out the presentations from both Andre and Jeannie. And Marilyn, if you could send over your list of when you're trying to get buy-in from your staff, I think that would be great to share with others on this call as well. We'll be letting you know when that the tools and the resources are posted and up on NATO's website to easily access those. Just let us know if there's anything else that you need assistance with or if we had forgotten to record something in terms of getting things out to the group. Let me just check in with Stephen and Donna. Do you have any closing remarks?
Thank you all for coming. Hopefully it was helpful to have this call. I don't know if Jen or Amy will be sending out any email or SurveyMonkey possibly to solicit feedback, but if you have any thoughts or if you'd like to see us do this again, please let us know.
Great. Thanks, Stephen, and thanks again to Andre and Jeannie for jumping on and talking about their experiences and kind of walking us through some of their resources. I think this was really helpful. So, yeah, as Stephen mentioned, feel free to let us know if you have any immediate input or feedback. Amy and I will try to maybe send out a quick evaluation form to help facilitate getting that input and feedback. So thanks very much, and have a good day.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.